Well, hi again. This is Bob Brundage, continuing a little oral history project. Today is March the 30th, 1997, and we've moved from Fremont up to Walnut Creek. And today we're talking to Jim Hilton and his wife Dottie. And so, Jim, tell us a little bit about what life was like before you got into square dancing, and where were you born and brought up, and here we go.
Okay. Was born in Hayes, Kansas on February 5th, 1918. Was raised in Kansas, went to Kansas schools, graduated from St. Mary's High, spent 2 years at the University of Kansas in Lawrence.
Okay.
Moved to California, I think it was about 37, and worked out here. When the war started, I volunteered for Signal Corps training and got a good electronics background, and we were supposed to be sent on a special repeater team to take the Philippine Islands back one at a time, and we got to New Guinea and were waiting orders, and MacArthur took Manila, and we sat there and went fishing and swimming until the war was over. So.
Yeah, that was bad duty.
So I had a beautiful electronics training, and after I got out of the service, why, Dottie and I got married in 1949, and she kept saying we ought to go square dancing or folk dancing. And finally, we got folk dancing a little bit and enjoyed the square dancing more. After a year or two, I got the bug to learn to call.
Okay.
Then when I learned to call, I found there was a very dearth of good sound equipment, and with my electronics background, I started building monitors first, just for the old Newcombs.
Right.
And then I put a complete unit together, an old tube unit, weighed about 50 pounds. And a caller came on a program and called with me, and he said, "Where'd you get that?"
Yeah.
And so he bought it, and then I built another one, and that's the beginning of an audio product.
Right. And well, let's go back a minute, though, before we get into Hilton. You started folk dancing, but then what was your influence as far as getting into square dancing was concerned? Was there a particular caller that you...
We enjoyed the actual squares, wasn't that it, huh?
The folk dance leader used to give us two or three squares a week.
I see.
And we liked the squares better than the folk dance.
Yeah.
And finally, we heard where there was a folk dance at a festival, so we just went to watch and talked to the people there, and they told us where we could find a class.
You mean square dance? You said folk dance.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah. We went to a square dance.
Yeah.
Right.
And
go ahead.
Well, we finally went through all the classes and heard our first, I guess our first name caller was Joe Lewis.
Yeah. All right. Pretty good place to start.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We danced with Bill Kastner for a long time.
Oh, did you? Okay.
He lived in our area here.
I love Bill. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now you got into calling and started forming your own clubs and so forth, did you?
Well, let's see. We danced quite a while before we...
I see.
We worked a lot in...
We danced with Kastner for quite a while.
Quite a while, and he was my caller instructor.
Yeah.
We inherited his club.
Eventually,
it was our first club that we ran.
Okay.
And we were one of the few clubs in the area that we ran as a caller-operated club.
I see.
Jim Mork and I called for it, and the girls did all the catering. And,
okay.
And...
Was that Jim York, you say?
Mork.
Oh, okay. I didn't want to confuse the issue.
No, but we danced to Jim York many times over at the Allens.
All right.
With Lee Helsel.
Lee Helsel.
Madeline Allen?
Yeah, Madeline Allen.
There you go. There's a name out of the past.
You bet.
Right.
Fantastic times over there.
I bet. So, okay, and so tell us about some of the big events that you've been to, like nationals or whatever.
Oh,
State Festival.
Long Beach.
First.
Oh, you were at the first
Long Beach.
One? Yeah, you were there.
And that was the first big convention where my equipment was used.
Oh, that's right, too. Yeah.
And I remember the evening program had a caller by the name of Burl Main.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who in the world is Burl Main? And that Saturday night program, he kicked it off, and boy, he made the whole convention for us.
I bet.
He was just fantastic.
Yeah.
He made my equipment sound real good.
There you go. Yeah. So,
and
other state festivals or anything?
We did lots of state festivals. I'd have to try and rack my brain.
Yeah, well.
Name them, honey. Yeah. We did Atlantic City once. And
did you?
We did the Reno Silver State for many years.
Many years.
Okay.
Hilton Audio is doing that one now. This is their 50th, and I think we started up there on their second or third one.
Okay.
Came in doing their sound.
Right.
So that's a major festival in our area is the Reno Silver State.
Right. Well, of course, Hilton Audio turned into a very, very successful business.
Yes.
And you know, it's, I don't know if anybody uses any other equipment anymore. It's not a
very help. Little. It's the advent of the mini disc is kind of, everybody wants to get something lighter and smaller
right.
Now. So,
well, is Hilton Audio going to get into that eventually?
I really don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't been too close to
right.
It. Dick has done a beautiful job. He
mm-hmm.
paid me off and never missed a payment or anything,
right.
And he's running a fine company down there.
Yes, right. So, well, I remember my equipment, I started out with a little 8-watt box and one speaker and carried them separately, of course, and then one microphone, that was it.
Yeah.
And gradually graduated into Caliphone. And they had a tendency not to last too long, Caliphone, but it served the purpose at the time. And that was before I'd ever heard of Hilton. By the time I heard of Hilton, compared to other pieces of equipment, it was a little more expensive, and rightly so, because it did the job that you wanted it to do. And I have a Hilton to this day, but be that as it may. Can you tell us a little bit more about your equipment? It must be quite a complication to set up for some of these big festivals. And,
it was complicated in one way, and in other ways it was just a heck of a lot of common sense.
Yeah, okay.
The big purveyors of auditorium sound equipment had absolutely no conception of what we needed. They didn't
right.
realize the importance of the speech over the music
right.
or how to regulate the quality of the music
right.
separate from the quality of the voice. The voice
right.
had to be sharp and clean, and the music with a bass beat. And the commercial boys don't have any conception of that.
Yeah.
And that's one reason we were successful.
Mm-hmm.
We took pains to go in and look at a place over and tried to analyze it well and see if we could do a job. If we felt we couldn't do a job for various reasons, once in a while we ran into politics and we did
sure.
get involved. And,
yeah.
So.
Well, you were using your own speakers at that time?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, in conjunction with your turntable amplifier. So.
I learned some of that from Lee Helpsel when I first got started.
Yes, I had a pleasure.
He wouldn't fool with anything but Lansing speakers. And
right.
It taught me a lesson that they would do a job. And
yeah.
so that got me on the idea of building a top quality unit and not trying to build anything cheap.
Right.
Several others did. But,
right. Did you ever get into the column business?
Very briefly, we built a small column, but traditionally the manufacturers of columns were building it primarily to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't too much interested in the quality, and the speakers they used did not have enough high frequency response to cover well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of their selling points. They would say, well, you can stand right in the front of this column here and it won't feed back. And sure, it won't feed back. There's no high frequency response.
I see, okay.
So, but they had a good marketing program. I suspect that there was something going on that working with the callers that they sold them, I never knew and I never got involved with it, but they became very popular, and whenever we set up A/B listening tests, we were pretty sure which ones had come out on top.
I see. Okay. But Hilton Audio is still putting speakers, I mean the sound equipment in the Nationals and probably other festivals today?
I think Palomino Records is actually doing the job, and Hilton Audio furnishes the equipment to them. They buy it and then turn around and sell it to callers
after the convention.
I believe that's
right.
What they do. But,
well, they were at Caller Lab, and they sounded every room.
Oh, Caller Lab, yes, but not the Nationals. I don't think the Nationals are being run by Hilton Audio, I think. Forget his name, Palomino Records, what's his name?
Yeah, Ted Dillander? Tom Dillander.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess he's got a pretty large organization now.
Tremendous.
Yeah,
must be.
Guess the only one bigger than that is Supreme, huh?
Yeah, I guess, well, they're nip and tuck as far as I know. But,
is it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going down to the National in Orlando, and I'll see what it's like. I haven't been to a National in several years, but I hadn't been to Caller Lab in several years either.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, what about local callers associations? You had to be part of that.
We belong.
We were for a long time.
For a long time.
Dwindled down to practically.
Is that right?
We haven't been active in it for over 10 years.
Yeah, now, it's so. Still active, though. I mean, you still...
Very small.
Is that so?
Very small.
Because this is such a tremendous, you have such a population potential here that... Compared to some places. But, how about I run across at the archives, I keep running across considerable notes from the Northern California Square Dance Callers Association.
Mm-hmm.
Is that
that's where we belong?
That's okay. That's going down to. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty.
We have volumes of notes that came out of those meetings and your workshops and so forth. And then there's another Southern California.
They were very big. Southern California had a tremendous number of callers in it.
Then I found I almost intermixed the two without realizing it because of the name, the Southern California Dancers Association. Also
that was very large.
Also put out very extensive notes and so forth. So, okay, well, getting away from square dancing for a minute, have you ever gotten in any other hobbies? Jim, I just passed a beautiful golf course down there, and you say you don't play golf. Well, what are you going to do?
No, my first love, of course, was electronics.
Yeah.
And over the 10 years that I retired, I built a few things and gave to Dick. I developed a big wide-angle speaker for him, and turned that over to him. And built some cases and things for them. I am a supervisor here at the Rossmore Wood Shop. They have a complete wood shop facility.
Oh, that's great.
And,
that's nice.
I putter around down there a lot. And quite lately, I've been a lady here in Rossmore who teaches line dancing. Has come and pleaded with me to put something together that would let her be heard instead of the boombox she's using. So,
I see. Okay.
I showed her a mini disc and she fell in love with it.
Sure.
And so I'm in the process of putting something together for her. So.
And a mini disc, like a mini disc? Is that right? Oh, there you go. First thing you know, Jim, you're going to develop another company here if you're not careful.
You just never know. But
right.
There are two types of mini discs. I guess you knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
Okay. The little ones that the callers carry are little hand.
Right. That's made of a Sony, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Most of them are made by Sony.
The
ones around dancers use are about 11 inches long, so wide.
Okay.
And full remote control.
Okay.
They can stop them and start them from
the
floor. And in your tape recorder, when you play a selection through, you have to wait until it rewinds, you know.
Oh, I see.
But with a mini disc, when it's through, you push the button and bang, it's there ready to go.
Right.
So there are some tremendous advantages in it. You can put 27 selections on one mini disc.
Right.
So size-wise, you can carry a whole lot of material with you.
Sure.
And there's a need to develop something lighter and portable to go along with them now. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of power, so I'm cluttering, you know.
Okay.
And another hobby is our motorhome.
We have
a motorhome, and when we first retired, we traveled quite a bit in that.
Yeah.
We loved Mesa's dancing, and we used to go down to Mesa.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Jim had an uncle in Phoenix.
All right.
And for 1 year, we went around repairing equipment in Mesa. Jim put a workshop in the motorhome, and we went around and repaired equipment. And that was fun, meeting all the callers.
Yeah.
A portable repair shop.
Yeah, it was.
Son of a gun. So you probably got to dance with Wade Driver and Bob Fisk.
All the stars.
We loved
Randy Doherty.
That was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. Concerning some of these larger weekends and week-long events like Asilomar and Steamboat Springs and things like that, you've been affiliated with some of them?
We attended many of Asilomar.
Many of them. But,
as dancers.
As dancers,
right.
That was great.
Oh,
yeah.
Those were beautiful times there at Asilomar. Those were some of our most fun dancing.
Right, right. How about other weekends, like Steamboat Springs or
we never got there.
Well, we went to the San Jose weekend where you did sound and we danced.
Yeah.
Yearly festivals.
Where was the place back in Omaha or someplace where they put us up in the attic? I don't remember.
Well, that was Bill Davis and one in Jeffrey Cove. Bill Peters.
Oh, yes, right.
But Fun Valley.
Fun Valley.
Fun Valley,
yeah.
Right. Okay,
yeah,
I remember talking about that. Right. So.
We did festivals in Seattle and Oregon.
Right.
National or two in Seattle.
Yeah.
Seattle was a nice national.
Well, are you still RVing or not?
Yes, we have our RV. We take shorter trips now.
Mm-hmm.
We like to go up to the coast. We love the water. And we also go to a little town called Villa Vista, which is on the Sacramento River, and we park there and watch the boats go by.
Okay. Did you ever do any recording yourself, Jim?
No.
I thought you might have done a little with Such an Order or something.
No, I never got in that phase of it. Those were the big time boys. Small potatoes here.
Well, we're not small potatoes in the sound business, that's for sure. And tell us about your association with Caller Lab.
It was not really very eventful, other than that I think I joined when it started. I think I was an original member.
All right.
And I certainly subscribe to their policies. It's just a shame that we can't get square dancing back on its feet. But
well, we're going to be coming to that. I have a couple of profound questions for you. But one of the things that's under discussion these days around the country is the costuming. Do you have any thoughts about some people are saying that we're overdressed, and summer's lamenting the fact that many people are giving up the typical square dance dress and going back to prairie skirts. Do you have any thoughts along that line?
We always enjoyed the square dance costumes.
We loved the costumes. Right. We loved the clothes. I loved the western suits. Dottie loved the full skirts and pretty dresses. And
but actually, when we started, my skirts were ankle length.
Oh, yes, right. And
they were ankle
sure.
length.
Yeah.
Well, and then they started going up.
Right. The full-length pantaloons and the whole thing.
Yeah, that's right.
But I really think it's an essential part of the square dance activity. I really do.
Yeah.
It bothers me to see them coming in leotards, and I think it's the caller's responsibility to request his people to follow it, not to try to order it, but to promote it by saying, don't they look nice, and making examples of people who look nice, and to try to badger them, I don't think it'll ever happen.
Well, the people that, see, some people are saying, well, I've talked to people that are not square dancers, and they'll say, well, you'll never get me in those clothes. But you know, the same people that are saying that, they probably wouldn't square dance anyway, you know?
Well, either that, or they'll go someplace and have a good time, and a year later you'll see them in the dress.
Right.
If callers' wives uphold the dress, too,
yes,
I think
right.
that helps a
that
lot.
Helps
that's
a
very
lot.
Helpful. That's true. So, well, let's think about the serious side of square dancing now. Do you maybe you'd like to expound on one of the questions I ask? And where do you think square dancing has been, and where do you think it is, and where do you think it's going?
Well, it has been one of the most fabulous activities that I've ever been involved in.
Actually, our whole life revolved around it for many years.
Yeah, for many, many years it revolved around it, and a totally wholesome, wonderful, beautiful activity.
Right.
We got out in 86 at just about the peak of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a little bit of calling in the 90s here, but not very much.
Are you dancing at all today?
No, Dottie broke
her hip. I've broken both of my hips.
Oh, great.
Not at the same time.
No.
Okay, unfortunately, right.
Your but next question was now, was it?
Yeah, where are we now?
Well, we're in pretty much a stagnant stage, and as near as I can tell, I'm not too close to it. I see more activity round dancing.
Mm-hmm.
Round dancing is holding its own better than square dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to just meddle a little bit in some line dancing with this lady that I'm working with.
Right.
But as far as the future goes, I believe the callers are going to have to get off the dime and do more of the work and let the dancers have more of the fun. Politics in square dancing activities is just ruining. The political strata that you find in square dance clubs, it's ridiculous.
Right.
And you'll find that the clubs that are caller run in the major cities just doing great.
Mm-hmm.
People come and have a good time and leave, and they don't worry about politics. So
mm-hmm.
In the future, something has got to change about the politics at the dancer level, and the caller is going to have to get on the ball and work a lot harder. And the hardest job, and the job he's got to do, is bring beginners into it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key to it.
Right. Well, which brings up the point, do you have any secrets for recruiting that you want to share with the rest of the world?
Sure.
Okay.
Start a beginner class every 12 weeks.
Okay.
And have a place those people can dance without having to be invited, or they can come and dance and be welcome.
Okay.
Every 12 weeks.
12 weeks, right.
And at the end of about 4 or 5 12-week periods, you'll have a beautiful flood.
If it's not spoiled by the present-day dancers who are trying to steal them out of that class.
That's right. Of course, I was fortunate here in this community where outside people did not have access to come and dance with us, so we didn't. We were pretty well insulated.
Right.
So that's a secret that will work, I know, in a completely enclosed activity, but it will also work in others.
Right. Well, I always said that someday I'm going to find a little village up on top of a mountain,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to go up there and start a club, and I'm never going to tell them there's a square dance shop. Or I'm never going to tell them that anybody else in the world ever square dances except them and teach them the way I want them. But of course, I never have.
You haven't found that spot yet.
Right. But I, of course, I've been an advocate all my life of teaching other forms, other things besides square dancing to my square dancers. A little bit of round dancing, a little bit of contra dancing, and that type of thing. I really think that probably we're going to have to get around to that again someday.
I'd be surprised. That would certainly give some variety to it.
Right. Have you ever done any contra calling?
Very one or two.
Yeah.
And nothing where I really knew what I was doing.
Yeah, right. I hear you. So, one other question I've been asking recently is, do you have any regrets? Is there anything that you'd wish you'd done differently?
I'm pretty pleased.
Yeah, that's what most people say. I wouldn't change a thing.
I wouldn't have changed it.
No.
Yeah, right.
If Dottie wouldn't have broke her hip, we'd have been in it longer.
Yeah, that's
right. Okay. Well, I think we're pretty well down the line. Unless you have some other thoughts you think you'd like to save for posterity.
Anything for posterity?
There you go.
I can't think of anything else. It's a wonderful activity. We enjoyed it for many, many years. I hate to see it dwindle down.
Yes, right. You're so right. Well, time will tell, and I've been saying quite a while, 100 years from now, we won't particularly care, but 100 years from now, if somebody's listening to this tape, I hope you have a renovated new square dance program going on.
Yeah, I surely do, too.
All right. Well, Jim and Dottie, thank you so very much for letting me steal a few moments of your time
to
put this on
to
tape. I'm going to head on down the road. I have a couple of other people I have to see before I head back for Albuquerque, and people will be hearing about them, I'm sure. So, once again, thank you very much, Jim, so much, and we'll see you around the square.
Okay, sure will.